Blog Talk Radio.
I can see clearly now the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. Gonna be a bright, sunshiny day. I think I can make it now. The pain is gone. All of the bad feelings have disappeared. Here is that rainbow I've been praying for. Gonna be bright, sunshiny day.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexity of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or a bisexual man and even transgender men. So if you have any comments you would like to leave for me, just send me a note at bonkay@AOL.com, and if you have any questions for guest for tonight, I'll give you his contact information at the end of the show, and I think he'll be really excited when he talks to us tonight about a lot of issues that we face. Before I introduce my guest for tonight, I just want to mention to everyone that I'm really excited about our upcoming healing weekend in October. It's the last weekend in October here in Philadelphia. And people are starting to make their reservations, and people from all around the country and even from outside the country are looking forward to coming here, and it's going to be a wonderful celebration. I think I'm going to take that week and make it our official first Straight Wife Recognition Week. I think that's going to become a new holiday every year, and that's a great place to launch it, so we'll be talking more about that later. In the meantime, I would like to introduce my special guest, and he's special to me because he's helped me through the years, and I've had the actual opportunity to meet with him in person in California. Mike Arau, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Well, thank you, Bonnie. It's nice to be back and talk to you.
I appreciate your generosity to come on the show every year because there's always new women calling and new women who are in need of help, and you know, they really love listening to your podcast. I've gotten so many positive, you know, results back. And, Mike, maybe you can tell us a little bit, you know, about your business as a private investigator, the areas that you work in.
Okay. Well, as you know, I've been a private investigator since I was 18 years old. I started working for a recently retired supervisory federal agent and his partner, who was from law enforcement from Scotland Yard, and that was here in Southern California. I'm now 57 years old, and this has been my full-time profession for most of that time. I've had some other small things. So as far as experience and what we do as a full-service investigative company, there's not a lot that we haven't seen. There's obviously some areas that we don't focus on or specialize in, like arson investigations and things like that. But we work primarily in family law, all the different facets of family law, whether it's monetary areas, custody issues, infidelity, to see, you know, what the truth is in the front end before you decide what you're going to do afterward. We do background checks. We locate people. Outside of family law, there's a lot of the same types of research that we do that apply to other areas. So we can help a lot of people with a lot of different issues or situations that they're dealing with, and we always offer free consultations. And there's a pretty large percentage of people that we talk out of hiring a private investigator based on our long conversation with them and a consultation. And I think sometimes they're better off going in a different direction and maybe going straight to a different solution. But we usually can help people quite a bit.
I'd like to let people know that Mike has an amazing website. And the website is at info@linkedinvestigations.com, which I'll post on this broadcast at the end of it. Some of the wonderful things that they have that Mike has in here, for instance, there's sections on think they're cheating, here are the signs. And some of these signs I'd like to talk about for a few minutes with you because, you know, I think that these are important for people to realize. The first thing you have is unusual defensiveness. No one wants to be accused of cheating. It's definitely put ripped in a relationship. A partner that isn't cheating isn't going to be hurt by the suggestion, but they're going to reassure you that they're not cheating and admit they're unhappy, that the relationship has problems, especially if it's rocky. But when they become defensive and attempt to turn the accusation around or start lashing out at you to make you feel crazy, then that could be cheating. Which is a really good tip, right?
Yeah, I think so. You know, most of the time when someone's stepping out of the relationship, there's already a major hit to the respect that they otherwise should have for their mate. That's lacking. There's a lot of disrespect involved in that. And so when you question their integrity or you ask them what they're doing and they already know what they're up to, it's a defense mechanism. They try to turn it around on you most of the time. They almost never will admit it. They threaten consequences because you're now the problem for bringing this up. It's driving a wedge between you, and they use all of these excuses. There's a lot of similarity we see in those situations when we're talking to people about those conversations. So, yeah, a defense, it's usually cruel and accusational, and they do try to turn around. And they're also usually very paranoid, and they like to keep an eye on you, the victim, because they want to know what you're up to and where you're going. And it starts to become the way that they think.
Well, that goes back to point one that I should have made before this conversation. One of the points you bring up on a different part of this website is that if you are suspicious that someone's cheating on you, do not confront them, correct?
Well, correct, in short. But in the real world, I think all of us would say something and we would have questions. The problem is when we overdo it and we don't let go and we continue to do it and it becomes an extremely toxic environment. So my recommendation is if it gets to the point where you're having to ask them those types of sensitive questions, based on the answer, you should stop and don't always start a fight when they're stepping out of line. I think at that point you've got to take a different tact and perhaps reevaluate where you're at and what you're doing in that relationship. And if you need a PI to get you some evidence, then you can do that. If you want to go straight to an attorney and get a consultation about your rights and what to expect, then you can do that. But you should not share any of those ideas or threaten any of those things to the other person. Just use these experiences as a learning experience, and don't tip them off and make them more cautious and more careful and more angry.
And that's what happens once you tip them off. Then they're starting to cover their tracks more. And
right, it makes everybody's job more difficult.
Mm-hmm. One of the things you say also here is that technology is off limits. You know, it's interesting that when I was young, there was no technology. So my technology was going through my ex-husband's pockets and wallet and looking for phone numbers and looking for evidence. But that was, you know, 30-some years ago and 40 years ago, and that's really changed since then. Today, it's a totally different world because of technology. And I always tell women that if your husband is taking all of his passwords and not sharing anything with you and hiding his cell phone, and you're suspecting that something's wrong, then I really feel something is wrong. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think that when people have, especially when they weren't doing those things before, and then you confront them about some things that have fallen into your lap, maybe you saw a text or an email or receipts for something or all the other things that can happen. And so you question them about it. And not long after that, now there's a new password or a password that's being used and two-step verification for logins for everything, and basically you're locked out. And that's very common. It's real common that happens. And once again, it's better in those situations to be kind of under the radar and not be so outwardly upset and angry all the time at these things. Once again, those are natural emotions. But people have a tendency to really overdo it and make life miserable for everybody, when you can find the truth out on your own most of the time and then do something about it. Because the cheater isn't going to do anything. They've got themselves in a position where it's too difficult, or they're waiting for you to do something because they don't have the guts to do it. And so they're basically having their cake and eat it too until somebody stops them.
Mm-hmm. Some people will say to me, well, I think it's natural that people want to have different passwords. You know, they should have their own accounts. But I don't know. I'm too suspicious. Well, many, you know, because first of all, every woman who comes to me with a gay husband, they all have their own accounts and they all have their own passwords and they all have their own time on the computer. So I'm not saying that that's definitely a shoo-in, but I would say it's an indication that there could be really a problem there.
Yeah, I'm okay with people using passwords for their devices. I think that we have a little bit of privacy is not unhealthy, but I think that you can tell from other factors in your relationship, you know, if things are awkward and weird, yeah, then that might be a real obvious sign that something's wrong. But if you have a real good, healthy relationship and you're very comfortable and there's no weird red flags all the time, it's not unusual. I mean, I don't have a password on my phone, and I surely don't for that reason. But if I ever did, it would be simply to protect it in case I lose my phone or somebody steals it. But I generally don't, because it's inconvenient for me to have to deal with it every time I use my phone, which is many times a day. So that just gets to be too much of a pain in the neck. But yeah, it wouldn't too odd to me, but it's, you know, that's one step away from a very secretive behavior in most cases. And so it's their behaviors, and you're right, that can be a sign of it. But every situation is a little different, even though there's a lot of common threads between these situations.
Here you talk about obsession with appearance, that we all go through phases where we work to impress for well-being physically and emotionally. This might include buying new clothes, getting a new haircut, getting nails done, dieting, attention to grooming and hygiene, increased exercise. When your partner's quest for self-improvement becomes an obsession or seems out of character for their normal habits, it might be time to look into things, especially they would rather spend time doing these things than spending time with you. when you say that's true.
That's the last thing you said there was the point that I was going to go to. So if someone's doing all of these things to improve themselves, you know, we all go through ebbs and flows in our life where we feel that we need to do something more, or we're in the mood to start working out and exercising and eating healthy, and those are all healthy behaviors. When you're doing these things and you're still totally into your mate and everything's fine and healthy and there's no odd behaviors or feelings, then that's a good thing. But like you just said at the end of your statement, if they're not spending time with you, if they're having excuses for being away all the time, and there's a lot of unexplained absences, and they're doing all these other behaviors, to me, that would be a huge red flag. It's like you're doing all these things, and you're clearly not doing it for me or for us.
It's like when my ex-husband used to go to the gym, and it always, I couldn't understand why he would always have to get, you know, really dressed up to go to the gym. He'd be shaving, he'd be putting on cologne. I mean, he would be, it almost seemed like he was going on a date. And it didn't make sense to me. You're going to a gym. I mean, why do you have to do all this? But of course he was going to pick up, you know, people. But it just
right.
seems odd that when somebody's dressing better for others than they are for you on a continual basis, then there's something off there.
But, you know, I agree with you on that completely.
Then you mention here maintaining inappropriate relationships. It says it's fine for your partner to be friends with people of the opposite sex or the same sex other than you. They might hang out or meet for lunch or other activities, and there are times when your partner might even be overly possessive and overreacting about a normal, healthy, completely platonic friendship. But if your partner is continually meeting up with anyone for drinks, meals, or social calls, this might be a sign they're pursuing something more outside your relationship, and this can be especially true if you have expressed concern and they dismiss your feelings completely and continue to do what, you know, they want. And I think this happens with a lot of us. You know, a lot of us see our husbands, you know, develop these friendships with other men, and they spend so much more time with them than they're spending at home. And you just feel so totally abandoned. And even though you may not know exactly at that point your husband's gay, you know this isn't like normal behavior. So I think this is a really important point. If you see that there's inappropriate relationships with other men, you know, because we're talking specifically about gay men in our show, you know, that I don't believe that most men want to be friends, first of all, with other gay men, straight men I'm talking about. I don't know too many straight men who have gay friends that they hang out with. Not that they're homophobic or not that they don't, you know, they're prejudiced. It's just I don't see straight men going into gay bars. Have you seen that in your time?
Not really, no. No, that doesn't seem something that would be interesting to me at all.
No, I think it'd be very uncomfortable for a straight man to be hanging out in a gay bar. So when people, you know, tell me that their husbands are going to gay bars with friends, not because they're gay, but because their friends are gay, I think straight men just don't feel comfortable in that particular situation. So to me, that would, you know, definitely be an indicator that something is off there. So that to me is like an inappropriate relationship. And
right, I think it could definitely.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say that could definitely be a sign that something's not right. But, yeah, I think that if it happens occasionally, that's not a big deal. But I think, like you say, whenever there's a behavior like this and there's a pattern and there's it seems like there's always a change in their attitude towards their mate. They're not, they don't care about your feelings as much. They don't really care to explain themselves, or they go into these long, you know, descriptions of things that don't make any difference. So there's usually a lot of lying involved. When you confront them, another reason not to confront them, it's almost counter to the whole point. If I'm lying to you about everything and I'm deceiving you about everything, what makes you think that I'm going to tell you the truth about it when you press me for it? Of course I'm not going to. Even if you catch me, I'm not going to tell you the truth about it. And that's another false that people believe, that, well, now that I've caught them, I'm going to confront them with this, and we're going to be able to move past this, and our relationship will be better. Well, it's not up to you. They're the one in the behavior. They're the one that's making this choice. It's not up to you. You know, they may choose to, you know, work through something, but you make very clear in the situation, if you're married, if you're a straight woman married to a gay man, that's not going to work, in my opinion. And
right.
So
it doesn't work.
If they try to, I mean, yeah, because they can't stop their natural urges, and they're not going to be a happy person in this relationship with you if they're completely wrongly suited to be with you. And they may or may not have known that going into it.
I think a lot of them are very confused going in, or they're hoping against hope that marriage is going to change them. I mean, I know that a lot of people don't agree with me, but I've worked with enough gay men to really believe in my heart that many of them are just very confused, or they just are hoping against hope that they love somebody, and they do love you, you know, to the best of their ability, which is not the kind of love a man needs for a woman. It could be like a brother-sister love. But in their minds, this is love because they're not straight, so they can't think like a straight man. So they think if they love you enough and they really want a family and they really want a home and they've been brainwashed their whole lives by either their church or their families that this is a choice and you can choose the right thing, you know, I really do believe many of them are confused. But as soon as they start acting on it, they're not confused anymore. You know, as soon as they start doing what they're not supposed to be doing, that's when they have that responsibility to be honest. And unfortunately, many of them aren't, because they can't come to terms with it. You know, they keep lying to themselves. So it's so easy to, once you're living in a lie, it's just easy to keep living a lie. You know, you just lie all the time. It just comes up to nature.
It becomes second nature. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot easier to do that, and most of the people that are involved in those lifestyle situations where they're cheating, whether it's male and female or male and male or female and female, they already know the drill. They already know that they've got to be careful, and these are secretive meetings, and it becomes a lifestyle. And the unfortunate part of it is the person who's being victimized in the situation usually stays around in denial for years. And then they get obsessed that they need absolute proof, because when they've confronted the person for the millionth time and they've said, well, prove it. You can't prove it. And if they're cautious enough and you've got them worried enough, then you're probably going to have an extremely difficult time proving it. And what I talk to people about often is, if all these other things that you've told me in our conversation are going on, you don't really need proof of infidelity. If all this other stuff is happening and you're pretty sure that's what's going on and the marriage is broken, it's not the end of the world. It's not your fault. Stop obsessing with who's to blame. If it's not a happy, healthy relationship, do something about it. You know, if you go see an attorney and have a consultation, that doesn't mean that you're getting a divorce. Don't be afraid of that. Go learn and be informed by a professional who's a certified specialist in family law, who can tell you exactly what's going to happen if you go through with a divorce and how much it costs and the time it takes and what you should worry about and what doesn't matter. Somebody that's in that position is a very valuable asset, and nobody has to ever know that you even did that. And that's not a deceptful, untrusting thing to do to your spouse who's already lying to you in the first place.
Exactly. And that's, I think the point that you brought out is so important, that you may never walk in and see your husband in bed with another man. So if that's the proof that you need to know that he's cheating on you, then I think you're wasting your time. But it's like you have to put all these pieces together. He's not touching you. He's not interested in you sexually. He gets dressed up to go out. He's away from home. He goes on trips. And then, but I love what you do, because, you know, in the past shows you've talked about this. Let's say you're in a situation where you just don't know what's going on, but you really are ready to find out, that you can do an investigation, a forensic investigation, and maybe you can talk to people about that, Mike.
When you say a forensic investigation, are you talking about having things analyzed forensically? Oh, on the finance. Okay.
Yeah.
So we can do bank account searches. We can locate bank accounts associated to an individual's name and social security number. And we find bank accounts all the time that our clients had no idea existed. And sometimes those accounts have low money in them, and sometimes they've got a lot of money in them. And in most states, if that's not disclosed in the divorce process, the other party gets that money. But the main thing that you want to know is if that exists, if it's there, then that needs to be brought out in the financial part of the divorce so the separation of the assets is fair and equitable, even if they're trying to hide some of those assets. But our background checks, among other things, they also locate addresses of record to a person, whether they own them or not. That could be an apartment or a condo or a house that they're leasing to go meet with someone. It also shows property that they own, including businesses and residences and those things. In any state, it's a national search. So it's very common that an address will show up that's a record to somebody that everyone's scratching their head and saying, well, what's that? Well, that's they've got an investment going on the side with this significant other, or that they've got just so they can have a place to escape and go to. And those are just – that's just a tip of it. So there's bank account searches that can be done. There's property searches that can be done. Sometimes just a background check is doesn't include credit cards. It doesn't include loans and credit cards. You're basically, to run those, you're running a credit report, which I'm not allowed to do legally, not in this state. There may be some situations where people can do it, and I know a lot of people can get credit reports run anyway, but that's not something that we do. But we can locate bank accounts and investment house accounts. So if they've got securities and different things, we can. That's the same as a bank account search. Those are expensive searches, and from my perspective, they're fairly expensive. Background check is not necessarily expensive, but it can be very informative. But a lot of times people don't need a background check. There's nothing there that that would surprise them. They already know what's going on, or they're not concerned about what might be out there that they don't already know. You know, every relationship is different. Usually if somebody's in a relationship where there's a lot of assets, those are the relationships that you want to do these types of searches. If there aren't, you know, and they don't have any assets and that's not a concern, then they can move on to other things. You know, we make attorney referrals for no kickbacks or consideration or any attaboys or anything. So I just did that last night. I sent a list of four family law firms to some clients over in your neck of the woods, actually, so they can go have at least a couple consultations and find out, you know, what's important, what they need to get together, and, you know, for their attorney and everything. So the forensic stuff, like you're talking about, you've got bank accounts, securities, background checks, you know, locates, and then, of course, the old-fashioned surveillance. If it's a community property vehicle in this state, the spouse can put a tracking device on the vehicle. If it's an employer situation where it's a fleet vehicle, then the employer can put a tracker on the vehicle. But if private investigators are out there putting tracking devices on people's cars, that's illegal. And I've had clients that tell me that they were at the wrong end of a lawsuit when they were discovered having put a tracking device on their estranged spouse's car, and they had to pay quite a bit of money for that. So you don't want to be in that position. I've had a lot of clients that use tracking devices anyway. I don't have a moral argument with it. I think they're great. I don't use them. But if somebody's using them, I'm like, yep. And if they were legal, I'd have a box full of them, I'll tell you, because they help. They're not perfect. They don't see what's going on, but they can be a good asset. So if you're following someone and you lose them, someone can check that and find out where that vehicle is or where that person is based on a tracker. People put them in their kids.
How about some other kinds of spyware, Mike?
Well, I was talking about the tracker. So some people put them in their kids' backpacks and things like that too when they, you know, when they're going to be having a custody visitation thing. There's a tracker in the kid's backpack. But as far as the, you know, there's little cameras that people can find online, pinhole cameras. There's wired cameras that are hardwired. There's wireless cameras that transmit. Usually they can transmit up to 300 feet. They're very limited on their the spectrum, the field that they can see, because they're going to be very narrow, more like a telephoto. Even if it's a wide angle, it's such a small lens. You've got to make sure it's positioned right. And it's not difficult to get them to see a whole room and in a very small camera. But they've got to be maintained, and the power source has to be changed. You know, if they're operated by a battery or something, and that's for cameras. People use tape recorders all the time. There's so many different types of recording devices now. I mean, if you go online and go on some of these sneaky websites that are out there for listening devices and cameras and everything, that stuff's a dime a dozen. You know, you can get a little USB flash drive that's a fake. It's really a audio recorder, and they even make those that are video recorder. And then you can just plug it into your computer and upload the audio file and play and save any recordings that you have. So what would the benefit of that be? You can take a dictation tape recorder or one of these little devices I just mentioned, and you can tape it or Velcro it under the seat or somewhere in someone's car. And it can be a voice-activated one, so it's not just recording all the time. That would drive anybody nuts if you're trying to listen to it again. So it's only going to record when there's sound. And so you can really hear conversations on those things. In some areas, to do something like that would be illegal. So you got to make sure that if you're going to do that, that you're doing something that's not illegal. The same for houses and offices and all of these things. Employers catch employees stealing all the time by putting hidden cameras in offices, and then they see them rifling through offices and stealing money from wallets and things like that. So, you know, the same things apply. I still think that following someone, having someone followed physically, is the best way to interpret and see behavior. So if someone's driving and going to meet people, the tracker is not going to tell you what they did. It's going to give you an idea of where they parked the car, and that's all. And so having a human watching them or a team of people watching them, you can follow them into places. You can see if they meet people. When they initially meet, do they have is there any physicality between them when they part ways? Is there any physicality between them? Do they hop in the car for a while first? You know, what's going on? So that's something that an investigator could see that would be very valuable. And, of course, a private investigator documents everything. We write everything in a court-ready report that we can testify to. And we take video, if we're able to, and pictures. So you have all this information, and that would be the proof that a lot of people really, really need. It's not necessary for court in most states. I don't even know what states it would make a difference at this point. Most states have gone to a no-fault divorce state, so it doesn't matter the reason. The court doesn't even want to know it. They don't care. If you want a divorce, you got it. From the date of filing and serving them in California, you have a six-month mandatory waiting period. And once that 6 months has passed, if the couple hasn't decided they want to reconcile their differences, then they come back on that 6 month date and the divorce is final. Other issues, financial issues, custody issues, things like that, those can go on, but you're legally divorced. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, once you've been served, you're legally separated. You can go do whatever you want to do. If you know you're not going back into that marriage.
I'm very much against no fault divorce where there is fault. You know, I can understand where a couple's just not making it or they have differences. But in these particular cases, it's not like a regular no-fault divorce. There is fault here, you know, and it's not your fault.
I agree with you.
Your husband's gay.
I agree.
But, you know, when I see people
especially
having to give up everything.
Yep. Mm-hmm. If they go in knowing it, too, if you can prove that this was their behavior prior to the divorce, then that's false. They married you under false pretenses. They shouldn't have married you, and you were deceived. And we had a very strong client here in a heterosexual marriage that in their divorce proceedings, he actually won the case and proved that she lied when she took her wedding vows because she didn't love him. And she actually admitted that on the stand. But then later that was overturned on an appeal. And if that would have stood, that would have had a humongous impact in this state, because there would have been a lot. Think of all the cases to follow where people would have alleged that they came into it with bad intentions, or they weren't honorable, or they weren't being honest. And yeah, I mean, if you know that going in, then I agree with you. And no fault, I think. I don't know. It's a tough one, because the courts just get so bogged down with everybody blaming each other, and then the burden of proof is difficult. You've got to really prove it, and it just gets crazy making. So I think you make a great point. I mean, if you had that, that would be maybe a deterrent for people not to do these things. But I think
there are some states that have full divorce. There's about 14.
Sure.
Of
yeah,
them.
I know there's some left. Okay. There's still.
Right. And
I just had the conversation a couple of days ago with one of my guys, and he said he didn't know that there were any more. And I said, I think there's still some, but you know, we know ours, our primary state being California, so that's where we do most of our work.
Yeah, I mean, like, for instance, even aside from our issue, if somebody's married to someone where there's domestic violence and is just a rageaholic and beating up his wife, why should it have to be a no-fault divorce where there's fault? And so, to me, it just victimizes women more to call it no fault when there is fault. And then you lose everything, you know, that you went in. It's not bad enough you've lost all these years together with somebody under a false premise, and how somebody just strips you away as far as, you know, mentally, sexually, physically, emotionally, year in and year out pounding on you, and, you know, as far as everything taking away from you, and now you're going to lose everything anyway. So I just feel there's, like, no sense of justice for women going through this, but that's a long cry that I've been having for a long time. And nobody seems to want to listen to it, but thank you for listening to it. So I tell women this because you've been really great at articulating it. Even if you don't have exact proof and walking in on someone, if you look at all the behaviors like you mentioned, you see that somebody's, you know, keeping secrets and they're not around and they're not touching you and they're getting dressed up to go out with other people and they're putting you down. I mean, you have to take all these things and be honest about them. And think to yourself, why do you, first of all, want to be in a marriage with somebody like this, first of all? But also that, you know, this is not the normal way of marriage. And I think part of our problem is, Mike, to be honest with you, many of our women come from relationships growing up where there wasn't, you know, where there was dysfunction. And I think predators look for women, you know, they can tell when things have, you know, when they can find people who have been in bad relationships. They can manipulate them better. You know, they're just kinder women. They're more accepting, you know, so they kind of hone in on you. They know the kind of woman they're looking for. And then they just
right, and the women
them.
Don't spot that in the man.
Well, you know why? Because women are always thinking they can change a man. You know, they look for these guys who are bad guys because they can make them good if they give them enough love. Look, I know the feeling. I was there when I was younger, too. I always thought I could change everybody. You know, you can't even change yourself. How are you going to change other people? But when you're young and you're in love and you really believe the best in people, and a lot of these guys have personality disorders, so of course they love bomb you to death in the beginning so that you'll fall in love with them and want to do anything for them. And then it's the erosion step by step once they have you. Do you find that in the relationships you're dealing with?
Most of the relationship cases that we work, that's exactly what's going on. People put up with a lot more than they should. You know, you get a little jaded, to use a cliche, when you see this all the time. And I do the best I can. I mean, I don't want to push anyone to go one way or the other, but so many people are just so busy finding excuses not to do what they know they need to do. And they should step back and say, what advice would you give to someone that you really cared about if they had the stories that you have, if they were in the situation that you're in, if they were telling you your story and you wanted to give them some good advice, what would your advice to that person be? And then why won't you do that?
Well, that's what I tell my women. If your sister came to you and or your daughter comes to you and says, Mom, I'm going to marry a man just like Dad, what are you going to tell her to do? Go ahead. That's wonderful. Because I haven't had the woman yet who's ever said that to me. They all tell me they would tell her to run the other way. So I would say if it's not good enough for your daughter, then it should not be good enough for you. And I think that's what a lot of women, they mean well, they really do. They're thinking they don't want to break up a family, they want their children to grow up with their father. But what they don't understand, as I keep hitting this home, is that children model themselves after their parents. And if they see that you're in a relationship where there's a lack of respect, a lack of intimacy, a lack of love, that they model themselves in their own future relationships like that. If they see you're being abused, that if you're, you know, that there's domestic violence, then it's very often they walk into the same relationship for themselves because that's their normal. They don't know any differently.
Right.
So I tell women, you have to be role models for these, you know, children of yours, you know, who you think it's better off for them to be in this dysfunctional relationship. I haven't met the child yet, the adult child who said to me, I'm so glad my parents stayed together. I've worked with a lot of these adult children, and none of them have told me that. They all told me how they screwed up their heads.
Yeah, it makes you cringe
right?
when people say, oh, we're staying together for the kids.
Right. I say they're staying together for themselves, you know, not for the kids, because kids need a healthy environment. It's better to have one healthy parent than two unhealthy parents.
Right. And a loveless relationship with lying and deception and, you know, sometimes fighting and things like that. That's not a good environment to raise kids in because, like you said, they're learning from that. They would be much better off if they learned that when somebody does that to you, you leave that relationship and take care of your kids.
Mm-hmm. So, as we're concluding tonight, because I can't believe our time's already running out, I just want to mention that even though you're in California, you work with people all over the country, correct?
Yes.
So it doesn't matter where you live. If you need help, Mike can help you. And once again, I'll put his contact information up on this blog post, and I'll put it in our next newsletter as well. And if you need help with anything as far as getting a private investigator, getting advice, referrals to lawyers, that Mike said he has contacts around the country, which a lot of our women do need that. That would be wonderful. And, Mike, I really appreciate the fact you take the time every year to come on the show and really spread the good word here on how women have to really do their investigations and find the information they need in order to have a more fulfilling and happier life.
Mm-hmm.
I wish you were here in Philadelphia,
well, thank
Mike.
You. It's a pleasure. Yeah, we go.
Are you planning a trip?
Have some fun.
Are you planning a trip to the East?
Not right now, but you know, I've got some nephews that are out there now, so I might be going that way to visit. And if I do, I'll give you guys a call and see if you're up for doing something.
Oh, I'll always be up for a visit from you. I really appreciate it. And I wish all of our listeners a good week. Mike, thank you so much, and we'll be back again with you next year. If all is well, right?
All
right,
love
everybody.
Yep,
have a wonderful week. All right. Good night,
Take care.
Everybody.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye.